Episode 4, Lifting Up Others and Barbells While Undiagnosed, with Dr. Marcia Darbouze. You're listening to Chronically Badass, a podcast by and for people who are redefining what it means to be chronically ill. Whatever your chronic condition or invisible illness, and regardless of your sport of choice, you are a badass if you do what you can each day to move your body and lead an active lifestyle. Along the way, Chronically Badass is here to support you, inspire you, and connect you to a network of other badasses. Hello, badasses. I'm your host, Chris Grenier. Last week, we heard from Sophie Grace Holmes, a badass with cystic fibrosis and a love of endurance sports and outdoor adventures. Sophie recently got back from biking 980 miles across Britain, and she shared some of her memories from that ride, as well as from her high peak summits and mountain treks. Whether you need a little inspiration during a bad health day, Sophie's had plenty, or while getting through a long run, I recommend going back and listening to episode 3. Today I'll be talking with Dr. Marcia Darbouze, a physical therapist, powerlifting strongwoman, and chronic illness warrior. She speaks openly and honestly about being undiagnosed, about readjusting her plans in light of her illness, and about her passion for lifting up others and working toward inclusion in the fitness community. I enjoyed listening to and learning from her perspective and her advice, and I'm happy to be sharing this conversation with our community. Here's my call with Marcia. Welcome to Chronically Badass.
Hey, how's it going?
Going well. How are you doing?
Not too shabby at all. Pretty good day so far.
Nice. Well, thank you for talking with us this evening. There's so much that I want to talk with you about. But to start us off, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your story. When did you first begin realizing you were dealing with a chronic illness?
Basically, for me, started in about 2015. So I've always been fine. I've always been active, athletic, like regular childhood stuff, nothing, you know, weird going on, you know, just a little clumsy, that's about it. You know, I'd like always sprain my ankles or, you know, like little things here and there, and people were like, yeah, whatever. But then in 2015, I started getting arrhythmias, and at the time, I also had like blood pressure that skyrocketed, my heart rate skyrocketed, like I would wake up feeling like I was gonna die. And that's what started it. And so ever since then, I kind of would have new problems, and I just keep adding and adding to the list. So here I am 4 years later, overall better than I've been, but with a lot longer list than just the arrhythmias.
Wow. When you had shared your story on our social media channels, you owned the fact that you were undiagnosed at that point anyway. And that really stuck out to me and was remarkable because of the amount of time that I and probably many of us have spent working to figure out exactly what's wrong with us and dealing with, you know, so many different doctors along the way, the specialist and after specialist, you know. How long did you pursue a diagnosis? And then when did you decide to either put that on a back burner or accept being undiagnosed and like live mindfully as though you had a chronic illness?
Well, basically, I mean, the first couple of years were scary because everything was new. Everything was all over the place. I had no control of my body. I didn't understand what was happening. And I don't really know where things changed or where the shift happened, but I can say that it's not as though, you know, a name doesn't matter. Of course it matters. You want to know, like, what is wrong with me? I'm a physical therapist. It's the same thing. If someone comes to me, like, they want to know, like, is there a name for the pain that I have? Like, it just makes mentally a huge difference. Because then you can go on Google, look it up. Oh, this, well, what makes it better? What makes it worse? And you can have a whole, you know, like, you could wrap your head around it. So just the idea of not knowing was definitely a big stress and a big anxiety. But once I got to a certain point where the symptoms kept piling up, and every specialist I pretty much went through a round of, you know, I'd show up to a GI or show up to the geneticist or whatever, and they'd be like, oh, dang, that's a lot going on. Man, you probably have this, or maybe you have this, or it's probably this. I mean, like, I had a geneticist tell me that she probably thought I had a progressive muscular disorder. I'd be in a chair in a couple years. I mean, these people were freaking out. So I was freaking out. But then, you know, my test results come back, and they'd be like, oh, okay, well, this is good news. You should be happy. And, you know, I spent the first 2 years, like, you just told me, like, my world is going to end, and now you told me I should be happy. What do I do? So, I mean, it's just, you know, you can only go through that for so long before you're like, you know what, fuck it. Like, I'm not going to die today. This is where we are. Whatever.
Oh, I can understand both. Yeah, you're continuing to feel worse, and then somehow tests come back normal and all is supposed to be well. And it's, yeah, not. I think that being able to go forward like that without the name is it just shows so much strength of character and like a knowledge of your body and trust in your mind. The closest that I've come to an analog of that was after we had treated my Lyme disease, I was continuing to still have lingering symptoms, and they didn't know whether, long story short, the medical community has, it doesn't have a consensus on whether to call that no. post-Lyme disease or post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome or chronic Lyme. And so eventually it was like, well, I don't care what we call it, but this is what I'm experiencing. What can we do to solve it?
And yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what have you found makes your condition better, or how do you go on that way without the internet being there to tell you what it is?
I mean, basically, I am lucky in the sense that I am in the medical field, and, you know, I do understand how to, you know, because you could just Google something and you're on a whole fucking wormhole. So I do understand how to go on, you know, PubMed and look at research and be like, all right, this is a good research study. This is a bad one. And I'll just look up specifically to my diagnosis and I'll just try things. And by my diagnosis, I mean like my symptoms. Not, you know, the overarching answer in all caps. So, you know, I've looked up random things. I've tried different supplements. Some have worked, some haven't. I've done acupuncture. That has been successful. You know, I try to see a chiropractor once a month. I bought, like, a whole body vibration plate. Oh. Although they do sell that gimmicky for weight loss, like, it's actually great for muscle spasms. And then that's kind of how I go about my life, because prescription medication, you know, I gave it a run. I gave it a shot and it wasn't working. And the only responses that I really got was, okay, well, let's up the dosage, or maybe we'll try this one. I don't know. So that avenue hasn't really been working for me as far as medication goes.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned a couple times, and I'd love to talk with you about your licenses or titles. Can you share that so we know where you're coming from?
Yeah, I am a DPT, so that's a doctor of physical therapy. So I graduated in 2014.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 2014. Yeah, so it's been about 5 years. And that's probably made the biggest difference for me, like, in this situation. Because if this happened to me, you know, when I was in high school or college, I would have been totally lost.
Yeah, that's so amazing that you were able to have that knowledge already before you were sick, and not, I feel like so many of us jump in off the deep end and we're trying to figure out what all these papers mean and what we should do. And it's amazing that you had that knowledge ahead of time.
Yeah. And I'm pretty lucky that I went to a decent program, and, you know, as far as like the tests and the things that I've done, like, I've driven most of that. Like, you know, I started having pins and tingles, and I'm like, all right, I need to see a neurologist. Here we go. And I would see a guy and I'd be like, I want a brain MRI. I want this. And they'd be like, oh, well, it's not like you have dementia. You'll be fine. I'd be like, okay, next doctor, find another doctor, until I got, you know, what I wanted. And that kind of drove what I've done in the past 4 years, which is a lot. And I know that most people spend decades, and I've probably done literally A to Z, like every specialist, every test, every everything you could think of.
Golly.
And that's because of my background.
I can imagine that. Something that we definitely hear in the chronic illness community is that people deal with a lot of information overload, with there being so much out there to read. There plenty, you know, plenty of it conflicts with other information that you find. And so, what would you say to somebody who's struggling to figure out what information to trust?
I would say the biggest thing is, because there are some details out there that you're not going to find Googling, and it's going to get really confusing. So there's this one website that I would go on, and it's more of people sharing their stories and asking their personal questions. But honestly, to me, there's nothing that you can, like, you can't make that up, you know? So there's nothing that's going to be more valuable to you when you don't know what's happening than just going through, you know, a whole discussion or a whole page of people saying, well, I have this and this, and I don't know what to do. And someone else saying, well, I have this and this, and this is what I tried. So that's where I've done a lot of my research, or a lot of things have come up also. The website I usually go on is inspired.com, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah, so they have communities by like symptoms and also by like diagnosis. So if you have MS, or I'm sure there's a community for Lyme, there's a community for like sarcoidosis, or just generic like immune diseases. And you could, like, I could spend a whole day on there just reading what people are going through and be like, okay, good, I'm not crazy. Next. Okay, good.
Yeah, I've definitely looked at some of the anecdotal information too, to even sometimes it helps just to say this is what I'm experiencing and see somebody else talking about the same thing but using maybe different terminology that will eventually you'll figure out the way to say it to the right person who will then go, "Oh, then that's what you've got."
Yeah,
Yeah, I think that's really
definitely.
useful.
I think that's probably one of the better places to start, because if you just go down the wormhole of, like, one of my first issues was muscle spasms in my neck. And I'm a physical therapist, so I know which muscle it was. And, you know, there's a term for it. So I Google it, torticollis. And, you know, if I just went with that, I would have thought I had like some crazy disease, dystonia, or some sort of, there's like something out there called Wilson's disease, or copper fucks you up. Like, I was going down a wormhole, like, oh my gosh. But really, it wasn't that deep. So it's very dangerous getting on the internet and just going with whatever you find. The other thing I would say is to see, you know, what website are you on? Like, who's writing this article? Are there references at the bottom? And do they look legit? Or are they just other, you know, like random statistics? Or are they other opinion articles? You know, there are some things you can do to dig a little deeper as far as credibility goes, but you still kind of have to have a direction in your search and not just kind of like just type one thing and just go down that wormhole, because you'll get lost down there.
Yeah, that's really good advice, having that larger perspective that maybe you can gain from hearing other people's stories. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, Marcia, backing up just a little bit, could you tell me a little bit about how your chronic illness history then fit in with your fitness history? So I know you were always active, but did you just keep working out even when the symptoms started, or at what point did you get back into the gym?
Well, that was a part of, you know, kind of accepting that something was up, is that at the time I was just strictly powerlifting, but my lifts were suffering. Absolutely just terrible, just trash. And, you know, I would still have a good meet here or a bad meet here. You know, I'd still qualify for nationals, and I'd show up. I could barely do my openers. Like, the day of doing nationals, like, I literally felt like I could just lay down on the floor and sleep for 3 days straight. So, you know, after that was kind of like the big, okay, get your shit together, girl. So I did pretty much simmer down on trying to be competitive and, you know, trying to pick a meet and do a meet and just focus on, you know, making sure nothing crazy is going on and just stay active when I can. And I really had to dial it back because I couldn't really stand even the intense training at the time. So it definitely changed. So that was 2015, my first, issue, symptom, whatever, what have you. And then the last competition that I did was 2017. So it took me a couple of years of up and down and up and down to finally be like, all right, let's figure something out.
And so you have not competed since then, and you've just trained at home?
Well, I didn't compete in powerlifting. So,
Okay.
yeah, so for the next year, I was really just trying to figure out, how to move, how to deal with what was going on. And I had like extreme fatigue, extreme heat tolerance. That's better now, but at the time, I basically had to choose like do my laundry or take a shower. Like it was really totally just terrible. So I came back and I decided to get into strongman. And so that's what I've actually been competing in more recently this year and last year, and doing better at, because the way that the competitions are done is like totally. So like powerlifting, you show up, a squat, bench, deadlift. You know exactly which bar, you know exactly how your attempts are supposed to go, you know the order. Everything is very, ruley, standard. Strongman, every competition is whatever that director wants it to be. So you could, I could pick and choose, like, well, this competition looks like I could handle this, that. And they tell you the weights beforehand. It's not that you come out every time and max everything out. They'll tell you, you're gonna take this farmer's handle, you're gonna walk at 50 feet as fast as you can. And I can look at that weight and be like, ah, all right, I can handle that. And so the training kind of shifts. If I can only train twice a week for 3 months before a competition, but I already knew when I started that cycle that I could handle those weights, like I'm gonna show up that day and be like, okay, whatever happens is fine. It's just kind of different than powerlifting. If I can only train twice a week and I don't hit the numbers I'm supposed to hit, I'm gonna show up that day like, I don't know if I can max out today.
That's really interesting that I mean, I know nothing about the powerlifting or strongman world, and so it's very interesting to hear how the meets are designed.
Yeah, it's a totally different ball game, and I don't really get into. I mean, I used to play soccer and I used to play sports, but I mean, I'm not. I just like feel like I'm allergic to being outside, and I don't like to sweat, so I don't do any. I don't do anything else. Strongman is as like agile and like cardio-esque as I'm gonna get. That's it.
For someone who's just getting into strength training, what's some advice about where to begin, or what are some roadblocks to watch out for?
Is this specific to someone with a chronic illness or just anyone at all?
Let's go with anyone at all, and then maybe add some caveats for chronic illness.
Right. I mean, anyone at all, it is better to find somebody to train with. So, even if you can't afford to pay somebody, like I said, like it's not that serious, it's not always necessary to have a personal trainer or to have, like a powerlifting coach, because it's not cheap. And it's not a hobby that pays you back. So it's not cheap. But I would say it'll always make a difference if you have a partner. So at least when you're training, you have somebody to kind of, if you felt like something was hard and they're looking at you like, no, you were good, you kind of have that. Well, it has to be somebody that's honest also, but you can't have a yes man training because it's not gonna help you. So that would be my first thing, is have a good training partner. Also record everything you're doing and do it systematically. So even if you don't know anything about programming or peaking or, blocks and percentages, at least you know that if I'm gonna go to the gym and do squats with dumbbells, this week I did 20, next week I'll do 25, the next week I'll do 30, and you write that down so that you're not just showing up and just randomly doing things. And it can really be that simple. It doesn't have to be that complicated because you're just starting. And then the caveat for someone with a chronic illness is that you have to understand that, like the example that I just gave might not be for you. You might not be linear. It might not be you know, 20, 25, 30, 35, because 1 week it might be shit, and that's okay.
For sure. I record all my miles each day, each week, so religiously, but goodness knows it's all over the board by the time it gets done. So I can relate to that for sure.
Yeah, and when you have a chronic illness, you also really truly have to, listen to your body and learn your body, or like really cute quotes, but like, this is for real. When you have a chronic illness, you need to figure it out. Because there are days where you really do need to rest, and there are days where you really need to get your ass up. And you, like, to find that difference, like, nobody can teach you that.
For sure. Yeah. So individual. Do you recommend that people start with 1 day a week, 2 days a week? What do your clients usually start with?
Like a regular able-bodied whatever individual, just depends on their schedule, but usually 3 or 4 times a week of lifting. Oh, wow. Yeah, 3 or 4 times a week, and let's say like each session's at least an hour. It depends on what they're working on or what they're doing, but that's kind of what the typical look is going to be. But if you have a work schedule that doesn't permit, or you know, you're just not there yet endurance wise, you just start with something and try to be consistent with it. You know, you just say, all right, twice a week, 30 minutes. And then, you know, a month later, add another day or lengthen the time a little bit. And that comes into the, you know, being systematic about it and recording, because you'll also record how many lifts you did that week and, you know, how long it took you. And, you know, over time that gets better in general.
Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah. So if we could pick your brain a little bit more, recovery is a topic that comes up a lot in discussions with badasses. It seems like we need a little bit more time between workouts or after a hard effort. And I was wondering if you could share what sorts of recovery tools and techniques you recommend.
Sure. If you ever see some of my posts on my therapy page, I'm not a big fan of having to spend money on anything. Like, I think it's a trap. Like, you know, therapy gun's cute, like all that other stuff, super cute, but like, I don't think it's that serious. The most expensive thing that I've purchased is probably the vibration plate, and that was $100.
And what is that? I'm not familiar with that.
I mean, if you see it, I'm not sure what they call it, but if you see it out in the world, it's usually like at a weight loss center and people stand on it and it shakes them a lot.
And is one side of it kind of squishy and the other side's flat?
It's usually all flat, but it kind of shakes and rotates the person, jiggles the person all up. But basically what that does is if you have, well, either direction, if you have really low muscle tone or you have high muscle tone, as in like, you know, spasms, twitches, like your muscles on when it shouldn't be on, the vibration kind of helps regulate and bring you down somewhere closer to normal. So I use that a lot because whatever, you know, if I walk a lot one day, then my calves will be spazzing for a week. That's kind of how it goes. So for me, the vibration plate is probably the most expensive thing I bought. Otherwise, it is just super simple. I do like a yin or like a vinyasa type of yoga to stretch and move. You know, I take baths every once in a while with some essential oils. And, you know, like that's pretty much it. It's nothing complicated or super fancy or doesn't even look that cool most of the time. It's pretty much it. And just trying to not eat like shit the day I'm working out. I can't say the same for the other days, but at least the day I'm working out, I don't eat like shit.
I love how on your therapy page, everything is so easily understood, and your examples are great. I remember when I was looking there, it made me aware of my posture and aware that I was a little bit tight here and there, and it was fun to look through it. One of the examples that or one of the topics that you discussed there is how a workout is kind of like a 3-course meal. Do you remember that? How you had worded that example, because I felt like it was very useful to share.
Not exactly, but you just saying that will probably remind me, because a three-course meal, I mean, you don't just show up and just get to the entree, right? Like, you don't just sit down at a fancy restaurant and they're like, here's your steak dinner. Like, no, you get a nice little appetizer first, you get cozy, you get comfortable, you warm up to the ambiance, that's the warm-up, and then you get your main entree, that's the workout, and then you don't just get up and leave, you have a nice little dessert, maybe just a little coffee, and you kind of like simmer down, you process what you did, you relax, and that's the cool down, whether that's a little stretching or a little accessory work, whatever it is. And that's kind of how you frame that idea. And that's around anything. It doesn't have to be lifting. That applies to running also.
Oh, for sure. When I think I getting older, probably dealing with chronic illness as part of it too, but I decided no longer could I just walk out the front door and start running. I definitely needed to warm up, and then I definitely love my time stretching and foam rolling afterward.
Yeah, you can't just show up. And I mean, that's what we do, though. It's what we've done, and we don't exactly know any better, but now we do.
Well, I think it's, sometimes people are probably trying to maximize the amount of time, but at least for me, if I only had 30 minutes, it's better to only spend 20 of that running and then the other 10 minutes warming up and cooling down.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be an entire production to warm up and cool down. Just that's it. That's good enough. 5 minutes each, good.
Yeah, I like that. So while I was messaging you a few months ago, something that really stood out to me was the way that you value and work toward inclusivity in the fitness world. You write passionately about the importance of, you said, a safe place to get strong. And you specifically welcome people of color, the LGBTQ community, and disabled people to get more active. I'd love to talk with you about how the fitness world could be more inclusive and what advice you might give to someone who wants to get healthier and stronger but doesn't feel like they belong at the gym.
Yeah, that's a lot. I'm not sure where to start. It's not easy. It's not easy. If you're not, the skinniest, blondest, blue-eyedest, fairest, if you don't have the matching outfit with your lip gloss on, you're gonna feel like you're not it. And you're gonna feel like, am I supposed to be here? And fuck yeah, of course you are. But sometimes you have to see it, or sometimes somebody has to tell you, and sometimes you kind of have to snap out of it and just, getting that validation, like, yeah, you should totally be here, might, give that little push. And I'll give it an example of some of a post actually just today I shared to my story because I ran across it. Raw Nationals was last weekend, which is a powerlifting competition, which is like a pretty big deal. It was like 1,000 lifters or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah, and then like the top tier, like the strongest, like top 15 or so, lift at a separate time, and they make it at night. It's like prime time. It's like, such a big deal, and it's like an honor, like if you made it to prime time. And so they're showing the live feed comments. So there's like the live feed and the comments under it. And this dude writes, "Why are there so many black girls here?" And it's like, okay. And he's not wrong in terms of the shift. Like when I started, as I lifted in the same federation, when I started in that federation, there was like two of us. And yeah, and this weekend, and especially in the prime time, it was, I don't know how many, but you definitely need more than one hand to count.
That's incredible.
And yeah, and all it really took is a couple of people to be like, you know what, I deserve to be here, and I will. And the more that that keeps happening, and the more that somebody else sees it, then that trickles down, then their cousin sees it, then that trickles down, and then their friend at work sees it, and it trickles down. And now here we are, going from just two fingers of black girls to, you need more than one hand to count, and that's all it took. It does suck for that first person, though,
Yeah.
because that first person kind of has to show up first. But it's definitely changing, and it could change even more. And as far as the other intersections go, I mean, the more that you add something that is other, the more that you're going to feel excluded. is like the simplest way to put it. So if you happen to already be of color, you're gonna feel less than. If you happen to not be totally able-bodied, you're gonna feel less than. If you're not thin, if you're fat, you're gonna feel less than. Just all of those things. If you're not straight, heterosexual, conform to the gender norms, you're gonna feel like other because, in regular everyday life, you already do. So why wouldn't you feel that way in a fitness space? All of those feelings and all of the way that our society is ordered is going to trickle right into all the other areas of your life. So for that part, I mean, how each individual person can, if they're on the side of feeling like other, how each individual person can conquer that depends where you are, but it starts with saying to yourself, like, I deserve to be here. You might be you might be somebody with MS and you have to wear a brace and you want to run marathons. You don't see anybody else out here with a brace on. It doesn't matter. You deserve to be there. That's what you want to do, then just do it. I mean, that's kind of where it starts. Now, the logistics of it and how the rest goes, I can't help everybody with everything, but I give you that much. Like, whatever you want to do, just fucking do it. And if nobody looks like you while you're there, not everybody has to be an activist and actively make groups or post or push meet directors or push events. Not everybody has to be there. Like, just showing up is enough.
Definitely. I like that so much. Yeah. Thank you. All right, then. To wrap up our conversation, just for fun, we've got a few quick, light questions, a
Sure.
speed round of sorts. Are you ready?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. What's your gear MVP? A piece of gear that makes your athletic adventures better or easier?
Probably my Reband soft belt, which most people probably use as a real belt. I don't know what regular people use it for, but I use it like an abdominal binder. So.
Gotcha. What song is on your athletic playlist, either before you're working out or while you are?
So depends. Yesterday I was doing, I mean, heavy-ish deadlifts, but I wasn't very angry or anything. I was super chill, so I was listening to some jazz, some Cronbin. If I am going super heavy and I want to get super hype, it's usually some sort of Kanye or Kendrick Lamar, like, super hype rap song. I also have a playlist of Afrobeats. Sometimes I kind of feel dancey. So in between my rest breaks, I'm like dancing around. So it just depends. I'm all over the place. I could say for sure, not country. Metal is okay, but I won't play it. That's the probably the only nose.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
What's a great resource that you can share with us? It might be inspired.com, but it could also be.
Yeah, I think it'll be that.
Nice. I will definitely put that on our show notes. That sounds very interesting. I'll check it out. Okay, so finally, what advice do you wish you could give to a younger you?
A younger me. Well, I don't know, because I had to do all the me things to get to me now. So honestly, if I told myself something when I was younger, I'd probably be like, what the fuck are you talking about? So, I mean, a real generic one would be to slow down. Let's just slow down. And you know what? I was not at all mindful. And despite what, has happened between now and being younger, mindfulness could have made a difference
Oh, I love
in
that.
anything. Yeah.
Everybody, each week we've been hearing people's responses to that question, and they're all so different. I just love it. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to share your stories and advice with us, Marcia. It's very easy in this world not to be so real, and you've been real and honest and brave, and that's awesome. If someone would like to contact you or follow your badassery online, where can they find you?
Let's start with my personal page. So it's thatdoc.marcia on Instagram. And then, if you want to explore, I got my other pages. My online apparel shop And I also have a physical therapy business. And then I also have another podcast starting with disabled girls who lift. There's a lot. So just start with my personal page, thatdoc.marcia. And then, you know, figure it out from there. And if you want to message me and say hello and all that, say hello.
Fantastic. And I believe that you also have people can contact you for coaching, right? And do you even have a free trial of mobility exercises?
Yeah, so it actually should be on my personal page too. And you click the link tree and you could kind of get a free, you know, sample week of how to warm up and cool down and give it a shot. If you have questions, you know where to find me.
I think you create some wonderful resources. I think people will enjoy finding you online.
Thanks.
Well, thank you again. Have a great day.
Thank you.
So, will you be taking up weightlifting? Or maybe you'll be incorporating Marcia's three-course meal approach. Or maybe you'll just feel a little more confident in your own badassery next time you walk into the gym. Or even bring someone along who might be nervous about going on their own. I definitely encourage you to find Marcia on social media. The resources she provides on her therapy Instagram account are helpful and easily accessible. And I'm looking forward to the November 4th launch of the Disabled Girls Who Lift podcast that she's part of. We're talking about additional collaborations in the future. Next week, I'll be talking with Jasmine Moezi, a globe-trotting triathlete who's been working on strengthening her immune system after battles with Lyme disease and the Epstein-Barr virus. That's a conversation you're not going to want to miss. If you'd like to get in touch with us about anything you hear on the show or your own badassery, email podcast@chronicallybadass.org. And check out Chronically Badass Club on Instagram and Facebook for your daily dose of badass athletes redefining what it means to be chronically ill. Until next week, stay awesome, badasses.